Hello and welcome to the Nourish Practice podcast, a podcast focused on all things intuitive eating, intuitive movement, and helping you heal your relationship to food while moving away from diet culture in hopefully a nice, relaxed way. There'll be a mixture of solo episodes and guest interviews. Any topics you would like included, just send me a DM on Instagram at Nourish Practice, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This week I'm very lucky enough to be joined by Stephanie. She is a clinical nutritionist, CNP, certified intuitive eating counsellor, host of two top ranking podcasts in the non-diet industry, and creator of the Going Beyond the Food method. She founded Undiet Your Life, which is what we named this episode after, which is a global coaching and online training platform focused on helping women make peace with food and their body so they can live a fulfilling life right now. She is also the founder of Non-Diet Coaching Certifications, a professional training platform for dietitians, nutritionists, health professionals, which I think is super important because we don't get any training in this area. Again, another amazing guest that I sort of reached out to thinking she'll never apply, so I was super excited when she said she would come on. So do enjoy. A note that towards the end, her microphone cut out a tiny bit, but do listen. The audio is still great and there's still lots of words of wisdom in there. If you do enjoy, let us know. With that, I'll let you go with the podcast. Little blurb introduction to welcome guests on, but in case you want to say hello or add anything, super honoured to have Stephanie on today, so welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Casey, for having me here, and hello to everyone listening.
Yeah. So we're sort of talking all things undieting your life and sort of moving away from that diet culture today. So I know that you also specialise in intuitive eating and are in this field. So if you were going to summarise, what is intuitive eating to you and how does it differ from diets and going on diets?
So for me, the very first place I want to start is sharing my own personal story. Because I think it's really helpful for people listening to really then understand the concept of diet culture, because my story is a perfect example of what diet culture is. So I'm Stephanie Dauzier, and I'm a clinical nutritionist and a cognitive behavioral coach today at 49. But my journey in the world of not loving or liking my body began at 12 years old. At 12 years old, my mom took me to Weight Watcher because she was herself entrenched in dieting and looking smaller and wanting to change her body. And she saw my body growing, getting bigger, and she was afraid for what it meant for me. So at 12, she enrolled me into Weight Watcher. And from that moment on till the age of 40, my understanding of my body was that it was wrong and that I needed to control it and that it was different and too big. And the solution for that was twofold. Number one, controlling food, reducing what I was eating because my body was broken. It didn't know how to feed itself. So I needed all these rules and structure around my eating, and exercise was a way of getting smaller. It wasn't about moving my body, but it was about shrinking my body. So that was my journey for 25 years in relating to food and body. And that is the example of what diet culture is. Diet culture is a system of belief that prone thinness for women as valuable and as what your body and you should be prioritizing in your life. And with that comes weight loss and controlling food and moving your body in order to burn calories. So that's diet culture. And the side effect of that is manyfold. But where I really like to spend some time for people to understand is the psychological side effect or the mental and emotional side effect of diet culture, which is it's leaving an imprint in you. And for me, because I began so young at 12 years old, my brain was literally taught to think about myself, my body, as not being enough. So if you had a line to describe me as, I am not enough and I need to work harder in order to be enough, yes, with food and with my body, but everywhere else in my life. So developing perfectionism, people pleasing, burnout and exhaustion from intrinsically believing that we are not enough as women and that we need to work harder, control more in order to be enough. And that's really the most important aspect of diet culture, is that psychological and emotional imprint that it leaves in us, because it affects food and body, but it affects every other part of our life. So that would be my description of diet culture through my own story.
Yeah, no, I think so many people can relate, whether it's an experience with family or something that started that route. And I was chatting to someone the other day even about how perfectionism and that people pleasing just goes hand in hand with a lot of those sort of experiences.
Yeah.
So I was laughing away as I sort of wrote and read this, was the idea of, like, if we're not aiming for weight loss, what should we be aiming for? And I know this is quite a deep question it can get to, but if you were going to summarize.
Well, so this is a very broad question, and it's, I want to contextualize first. If we're not aiming for weight loss in our relationship to food, we should just be aiming that food is food, right? Mm-hmm. So I like to think about often when, well, not often, 99% of the women I've had the experience to work with over the last 10 years were in a relationship to food. They were thinking, engaging with food as a tool to shrink, manipulate their body or their health. Because now there's something called wellness culture, which is the obsession of food to solve health issue, even though there's no science behind that. So either way, women are in that relationship. They engage with food as a tool to achieve something else instead of food just being food. And I want people listening to this to think about that person in their life. And unfortunately, too often, that's their male friends and partners in their life who just eats. They don't think about calories and grams and macros and shrinking their body. They're hungry. They go to the fridge. They grab something to eat. They may eat an entire pizza on a Friday night while watching sports. And then the next morning, they just wake up and eat a normal breakfast. Like, they don't have any emotions around food or any other meaning of food than just eating and having fun. That's what we should be aiming for. That's what food is. Food should not have a result of gaining, losing weight, manipulating your health, making you feel better, increasing your self-worth. That's just what diet culture and wellness culture does. So it should just be food and eating naturally, following what I described, like your hunger, your fullness, your satisfaction, what you crave, the food that makes you feel good. Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, sometimes overeat. Like, it's just not a big deal. Just like I was teaching a class yesterday, just like, and I was giving the, I teach to professional how to take their training as a dietitian, for an example, and become a non-diet dietitian. And I was saying, like, do we regulate peeing? And everybody stood back like, no. Like, okay, so when you feel the urge to pee, do you, like, I don't know, is it the right time of the day? How much do I really need to pee? Like, is it worth it? Like, should I be peeing right now? And then when you go pee, do you, like, oh my God, I'm applying too much pressure. I need to be positioned a different way. I need to do this. No, you just feel the urge to pee and you go pee.
Yeah.
Why can't food just be like that? It was like that for millenniums, forever, until the late 1880s, about 150 years ago, when diet culture came in and gave another meaning to food and eating. Long answer for a very short question.
Oh no, I know that anything to do with food, diet, there's so much nuance, and actually it's so interesting chatting to a range of people. You get these different imageries, this different idea, and something just clicks often with people. They'll say, oh, I never thought of it that way, or that's really hit me, which is super, super useful. I know that you talk about dieting and trusting in yourselves. What's been your experience with sort of building that trust with yourself and moving away from that place of distrust that dieting puts you in? And when you work with clients, how do they build that trust?
So I like to think there's three main objective of undieting your life. What I mean by undieting your life is unlearning all the socialization that diet culture, patriarchy, beauty culture, wellness culture has taught us as women. So I specialize and I only work with people self-identified as women because there's a very specific way as women that we've been taught to think about food and body and health and beauty. So how do we unlearn that? How do we just go back to food being food? So there's three elements in this healing journey that we need to think about when we're either working with a coach or doing that on our own. Number one is the journey of self-trust. And what's the biggest misunderstanding about elevating your ability to trust in yourself, therefore following your hunger and your fullness, is thinking that you're going to move from controlling food to trusting yourself with food in one leap over.
Yeah.
And that's not true. There's a middle point that we need to pass through, which is called not trusting yourself with food. We need to move from controlling, we need to let go of the control, the rules, piece by piece, and open up this wide space, this empty space where there's no rule around certain food, and then experiencing the lack of trust, like the despair, the what we call in the world of intuitive eating as the pendulum swing,
Yeah.
right? We need to completely be free and go to the other extreme, which is like obsessing about the food and overeating and perhaps even binging in order for you to, through the experience, to build your trust. And that's the process of building your trust. So you need to move through not trusting yourself and experiencing that in order for you to build the skill set, in order for you to be able to trust yourself. And the ingredient, the magical ingredient, is safety. We need to be able to, and this has a lot to do with the other part of my practice, which is cognitive behavioral coaching and nervous system regulation. In order for us to be able to trust ourselves, we need to be safe with ourselves. We need to be able to consent. We need to be able to treat ourselves nicely. So when we go through the pendulum swing of not trusting ourselves with food, we don't beat on ourselves because we ate too much. Because we, like, I'll give you the example when people habituate, which is what I'm describing right now. There's a very scientific process called habituation where people go through that. We'll take chips, for an example. They have to let themselves eat as many chips as they want and make it safe for them to eat those chips in order for the urges to like slow down, to say, whenever you want chips, you can have it. You don't need to eat the entire bag at once because it's going to be restricted again tomorrow morning when you wake up. If you want a little bit tomorrow, you can have it. And if you want a little bit the day after, you can have it. You need to build that safety for you to be able to have the urge for chip and have it. So it's an experience of building trust through being safe with yourself.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a, like I said, that nervous system, and also because I think a lot of people get in their head of like, oh yeah, it will be an easy process, but you need to give yourself that grace to sort of go, I'm not going to judge you. It may happen.
Well, here's the thing I want to say to anybody who's thinking that it's supposed to be easy. It's not. And that's what makes diet culture and the weight loss industry so successful, is because it's hard to get off the quote-unquote bandwagon of dieting and wanting to lose weight. It requires mental and emotional effort. And people often meet this requirement, oh my God, it's hard, as being a problem, because they think it should be easy. So anybody beginning their journey in stopping dieting and accepting their body and making peace with food, I want to say to all of you, it's supposed to be hard. Nothing has gone wrong when you hit the hard part. This is exactly where you need to be. Now you need to build your interpersonal resourcefulness, your skill set, in order for you to meet that it's hard with power and resilience, and move through hard in order for you to change your life, change your habit, change who you are in face of food and body.
I think that's so important, especially with things like intuitive eating or your relationship with body and food. It's often trickier than you think, but it, like you said, it is life changing at the end of the day, which is why
Absolutely.
you've got to be able to push through. I know also as part of your work, you have a lot of focus on relationship with your body and in particular body neutrality. What is your opinion on body neutrality versus body positivity and how you work with individuals on their relationship with their body?
So I'm going to go back to my origin story where we started the conversation. I have a very unique perspective on body image, body neutrality, and body positivity, given that I've spent 20 years losing, gaining hundreds of pounds. And today, if you Google me or search me, you will see that I live in a fat body, what some people will call a mid-fat body. So I dress in the size 20, American sizing. I don't want to give my weight because that is a trigger for many people, but you can see the type of body that I live in. So I experience fatness, gaining weight. Therefore, I have a lived experience lens on it. And for me, given that I've been in this field, like I'm what we call an original gangster, an OG, I've been in this field for 10 years. 10 years ago, trust me, there was no body neutrality, body image work. It just was non-existent because we were so entrenched in the weight loss industry, particularly 10 years ago, that I had to, through trial and error, find a way for me to relate to my body that was going to allow me to live my best life. And that's where body neutrality for me came from. It came from trying what was beginning to emerge 10 years ago as body positivity slash love your body, right? And what I realized by trying to love my body, it was a very traumatic experience because I was trying to love what I've been hating on for 25 years. And that's very traumatic. It's like forcing yourself to go back in a lover relationship, which ended up in physical abuse, because dieting is physical abuse. So it's like saying, no, go back with your ex who's beating the shit out of you for 20 years and love him. That's what it felt like in my body, and actually created a lot of mental and emotional side effect, to the point where I had panic attack trying to love my body. Like I remember being in front of a mirror, pressing on my fat roll and saying, I love myself and I love myself, right? And what I realized in doing various training and healing is body positivity was never meant to be a body image healing. Body positivity was born in the 60s and 70s out of black fat activists in a social political circle as a way of changing accessibility to system to fat people. It was a political movement. It was never meant to be a therapeutic framework to help the individual. And then that's where body neutrality came in for me. So if it's not body love, then what are we going to do? And body neutrality came from my understanding of cognitive behavioral transformation, nervous system regulation, but also the world of feminism and understanding why diet culture, why the thin ideal exists in the first place, right? It was to oppress women in believing that they weren't good enough in order for patriarchy, not men, patriarchy to continue as a system in our society. So patriarchy is not men. It's the system of power that we currently have in our society that says people identify as men are the one to be in power. And that's what we see right now in our political system, right? The majority, 60, 70% of people in political office are men. People who, like, I'm in business, so people who run businesses are by far, like, 75% of CEOs are men. People, the richest people in the world are men. That's what patriarchy is. And patriarchy created diet culture in order to keep women thinking they're not good enough so they don't take the power, they don't access power in place of them. And so body neutrality goes to that place to say, okay, maybe the way we were thought to think about our body is the problem. Mm-hmm. And thinking that our body is a sign of our worth is really the root problem. Because if you look at your male or people identified as men in your life, they are not raised to think, well, you have to be thin to be worthy. They don't even entertain about the size of their body. They're entertain about their power skill, their ability to make money, their ability to protect people. But yet here we are right beside them and says, no, you got to look cute. You got to be a good girl. So what if instead of attacking the body image healing from you got to love your body, but to reprogramming your brain to think of your body like all the other human beings? My body is a tool for me to experience life. Mm-hmm. It's how I experience my senses, my view of the world, what I'm hearing, the music, the smell, the taste, the touch of my partner, my sexuality. My body is a tool to experience my life, not a sign of my worth. That's where the body neutrality works at that root and rebuild all of our behavior towards our body from understanding that our body is a tool, not a sign of our worth. Long answer again.
No, it's so important. Like I said, there's so much nuance, and particularly working in that sort of health every size and anti-diet space, a lot of people come to me and say, I just can't love my body, or I'm really struggling. And we have that conversation of maybe that sort of body love in its extreme isn't what you should be aiming for. And often having that conversation, people don't know that body neutrality exists. It's not.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem in our industry in general. So I'm going to talk at the highest level in the world of practitioner, therapist, dietitian, coaches, fitness professional. Most of those individuals either do not have the lived experience and do not understand the pathology in what it is, and or second, have not completed their own work and are still hitting at the surface level, not understanding how the brain works, how the nervous system works, and all the intricacy of it, as you said. And they, out of the goodness of their heart, are talking about body love, not understanding the ripple effect of it, and where, particularly women, how toxic can that be to them. So to the people listening to this podcast, just be really mindful from who you're getting your advice. And please do not think Instagram is your therapist or your counselor, because you're getting all kinds of wrong information there.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've been doing workshops with Evelyn, one of the creators of intuitive eating, and someone brought up this issue and said, like, what do I do if someone comes to me in a large body and I feel like I haven't don't have lived experience? And she said, refer on. Say, look, do you want to work with someone who has lived experience, because they may be able to help you in a way that I can't. And she was like, that's perfectly fine for some people. That's what they want, and you're going to get a much better experience. And don't be afraid to say and bring it up with people.
And yeah, that's an option. Or the two, I'm talking to the professionals here. Understand how to work with people, not superficially, but at what I call the root cause, aka how the brain is shaped to understand bodies and food. And once you do that work, you will be able to help all the people with or without lived experience. That's what therapists do. Like, if you're a professional counselor, you're not required to have lived experience in all the pathology you're going to meet. You're trained to understand, break down each pathology in order to help people. So that's what I'm encouraging professional to do.
Yeah, and I think it's so important as a I'm a nutritionist, and like the level of professional training you can get in the non-diet space is there's not much out there. So I'm so glad to see a program that
Bingo.
is
And
so yeah.
it's not with your 4-year degree in university that you learn anything about the non-diet approach. Trust me, been there, done that. Like, I've learned, I didn't even talk about. So, people listening, I just want you to understand that dietitian, nutritionists have not spent 1 hour of training in their 4 years post secondary university degree talking about hunger and fullness. I haven't spent more than 1 hour talking about this in the thousands of training hour. That's crazy to think about that.
Yeah, I often say, I'm like, I need to call my old uni and be like, can I come and talk about this? Because people need to know about this. Perfect. So, with that, I'll sort of wrap up. If there's anything you want to add, more than welcome. But we always do a sort of quick five finish, which is just some quick questions. And I just like to pick people's brain on some of their favorite foods, movement, and also a little bit of advice. So, we'll start with what is your favorite food? And it can be any food, any meal.
My favorite food,
Yes.
my cultural food. So I'm French. So for me, it's cheese, butter, and beef bourguignon. And these are the food, and baguette bread. These are the food that I have restricted for 25 years. And these are the food that bring me more satisfaction today after going through the process of intuitive eating.
Oh, I love every time I listen, I'm like, now I want that food. And then movement. What is your favorite form of movement? And that can be.
So that could be a whole other podcast. So for me, my favorite food of movement is the one that my body needs the most. So I have a pathology called scoliosis. So I have two different curvature in my spine that have been there since birth, which cause the left side and the right side of my body in different places to be tight and to be weak. So for me, which is yoga.
And strengthening certain part of my body. So it's what makes my body feel better. That's the movement that I love.
Yeah, again, I love chatting to people and hearing that it varies so much. And sometimes people say, you know what, it's that right now, and it might change in a couple of days because my body might want something different, and that's perfectly fine. So obviously, I named the sort of podcast Nourish Practice because of what that word means to me. If you were going to define it or sort of explain, what does that word mean to you?
Nourished. For me, it would be understanding yourself or understanding your body, understanding your relationship to food, understanding your relationship to your emotions, all the parts of what makes you a human being, and then having a respectful relationship with the needs of your individual mental, emotional, and physical
Amazing. And then final one, what is one piece of advice you'd give someone if they said, I want to improve my relationship to food, and they just wanted one thing for you to pass on?
Be sure that for me, self-awareness is always the most important piece. Answer this question. What does food mean to me? And really look at your answer. If very often when women are at the beginning of their journey with food, they'll say food is what makes me gain weight, right? Is what makes my body not look the way that I want. So look at what food means to you. And the meaning of it is completely optional to each one of us. And it's that moving you towards your goal. That would be my answer to that.
Amazing. Like I said, I speak to loads of different people and it's amazing hearing all the different sort of advice and bringing it together. That's all the questions from me. I will put all links, Instagram, website, etc. below. But if there's anything you want to share, you're more than welcome to now. But thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for everybody for being here and listening to me. It was nice meeting you, Casey.
And you. Stop it there.